Before we get into today's episode, I want to invite you on a unique spiritual journey this Advent season. It's called Journey to Bethlehem, and it's a free 9-day text message series designed to prepare your heart for Christmas. Starting on December the 17th, each day leading up to Christmas, you'll receive a short reflective message pointing you to the hope, peace, joy, and love found in the coming of Christ. It's completely free and a great way to keep your focus on Jesus this season. Why not sign up today at premierinsight.org/resources? That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, here's today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Joseph Weigel, a firefighter and host of the Men with Chests podcast. Joseph's also the author of a very exciting upcoming book called Planet Thulcandra, which is an exposition on the relationship between magic and science in that hideous strength. As well as finding out a little bit more about Joseph, we're also going to be hearing a paper that he presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Joseph's paper there was Dr. Dimble's Neutrals. Joseph, I want to hear about your upcoming book, Planet Thulcandra. It's based on That Hideous Strength, which is your favourite work of Lewis. Without giving any spoilers away, or trying not to, would you mind just giving us a little bit of a brief summary of That Hideous Strength and maybe pulling out what are some of the key themes and ideas in there?
Yeah, so the brief summary would be the two main characters, I would say, is Mark and Jane Studdick, and they're academics at a university, and they take two separate paths. Mark gets sucked in to this basically bureaucratic organization called the NICE, National Institute of Coordinated Experiments. And basically they're trying to take over England. They want to control England, and they're social planners is what they are. They want to plan society for what they believe is going to be this great utopia that they're going to create, basically. So Mark gets sucked into this group and wants to be an insider in this group, whereas his wife has these dreams and visions that she finds disturbing, but turns out these dreams and visions are actually like news, is how she's told it in the story by Miss Ironwood. Think of these things as news, you know, and they are. They're events that have happened, and she's now seen them in her dreams, and then it's information that she's able to provide for the other group, the anti-nice group, which is the company at St. Anne's. And this is a group that is led by Ransom, who is the kind of main figure of Lewis's trilogy. This of course, is the third book of that trilogy. So it helps to have read the first two to, you know, really understand what's going on. So Jane goes with this group. Mark goes with the other group. And then ultimately, the good guys at St. Anne's end up defeating the bad guys because of a lot of supernatural help. And and part of this is Merlin coming into the story, which is a great and fascinating thing. And then in the end, Mark and Jane come together again after they've pretty much separated for the entirety of the book. And then they come together once again at the end of the book. And that brings us to one of the big themes of the book, which is marriage. Another big theme is, I would say, what my theme for my book is magic and science. Mm. So those are two of the bigger themes in the book. And the book has a lot of layers in it.
Tell us about your book, Planet Thalcandra. Why did you want to particularly explore the magic elements and particularly the relationship between science and magic?
Yeah, well, when I read Abolition of Man, Lewis has, in the third chapter, he has this brief section where he's talking about magic and science as twins, growing up together in the Renaissance, born by the same impulse, and that impulse is basically power trying to dominate all things. But then he doesn't really go into it in much depth there. It's kind of a short comment and, you know, not really fleshed out. And when I read Michael Ward's Planet Narnia, Ward, he points to this chapter of Abolition as well, and some other passages of Lewis. And he says that this is a topic that obviously, you know, was interest of Lewis's, and something that he, you know, thought about, but never really developed in any sort of sophisticated fashion, his like full ideas on this issue of how magic and science are twins and related. And when I read that, it hit me. I was like, oh man, I think he did. I think Lewis did, but he did it in that hideous strength. Mm-hmm. So he, instead of doing it in a, you know, an academic treatise type of genre, he did it in what he calls a fairy tale for grownups. So that was what really got me hooked into thinking, all right, I need to explore this, because I had studied that hideous strength fairly deeply at this point. Mm. And I was like, I think there's a lot here that I can bring out and explain to people what Lewis is doing. Because there, at that point, you know, still there hasn't been anything done specifically on that hideous strength, just looking at this theme, you know. So while, like, I think I could probably do a whole nother book on, say, marriage in that hideous strength, I am only looking at basically the magic and science theme. And that's, you know, this is taking me a whole book, you know, to write. So there's plenty of material to cover.
So obviously, we're going to talk about this a little bit. Well, we're going to hear a little bit about this when we hear your paper. But what were Lewis's thoughts on magic?
Yeah, well, to begin, I guess we'd have to define magic and what he means by that. So in Oxford History of English Literature in the 16th century, that the volume that he called Oh Hell, in the first like 15 pages of that, that's really where, in terms of his academic style writing, where he goes most into the topic of magic. And in there, we see him divided into two types. One, dark magic, which he uses this archaic word, goetia, or goetia. I don't know how the different pronunciations are, but so you have goetia is one of them. That's the dark magic. And then you have magia, which is the high magic, or, you know, white magic. And so these are different types. And there's a couple of key distinctions between the two. One is that the motivation is different. So for magia, the motivation is supposed to be noble. You know, you're trying to do good, right? Whereas goetia, you got bad intentions. You know, it's sinister from the start. So that's one key distinction. Another key distinction he makes is that with magia, you're trying to command these non-angelic spirits. Sometimes he calls them middle spirits. In that hideous strength, we get the term neutrals, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But then the bad magic, the goetia, you're trying to use demons. So the type of spiritual force that you're trying to command to do your magic differs. So like Faust would be a good example of a magician practicing goetia in literature, where he conjures the demon Mephistopheles, and then of course things go terrible for Faust because of this. Whereas an example of a magia type of magician, we could look to Prospero in The Tempest, where Prospero has good intentions. Prospero also commands a aerial being named Ariel. And this is a being that is not a devil or a demon. It's this other type of non-angelic being or neutral. And so Prospero commands that. So these are two examples in literature, I think, that are really good for helping people understand, like, okay, Dr. Faustus, there's an example of Gattaea, Prospero, there's an example of Magia from Lewis's perspective. So that's the definition of magic. And now I'm forgetting what the rest of the question was.
Oh, just what Lewis thought about magic.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, there, I think there you go. That's, that's enough for getting a good grasp of the initial concept of what Lewis thinks about magic.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
Have you ever found yourself wondering if it's still possible to have civil conversations in today's culture wars? That's exactly why we want to send you a brand new and exclusive booklet called Arguing for the Sake of Heaven, a look at the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. This compelling resource reflects on Charlie's legacy and the controversies he sparked, but more importantly, it explores how we can recover the art of disagreeing agreeably. In a polarized world, how do we defend free speech, speak the truth in love, and pursue truth without fear? I believe this is a resource that every thoughtful Christian should have, and right now, it's our special thanks to you for your gift to Premier Insight. Your support helps ensure that content like this podcast and so many others continue reaching people who are searching for wisdom, truth, and hope. So I encourage you to give today by visiting premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis to receive your copy today. Now let's get back to today's episode.
The CS Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Joseph, considering Lewis's Christian beliefs, how do you see him reconciling the existence of magic with his theological views?
Yeah, well, this is one of the things I think that's so interesting about Merlin and that hidden strength. I think he condemns magic, including magia. So including that supposedly noble type of magic, because in that hideous strength, Merlin is described as being a practitioner of magia, and yet it's condemned in the story. He comes back and, you know, he wants to use his powers to help the good guys. You know, this is, he has good intentions, right? And then the powers that he uses, you know, the spirit beings that he commands are not demons. They're these other beings that are called neutrals in the story. So he fits the definition exactly of what Lewis means by magia. And yet Ransom repeatedly tells him, no, you know, you're not allowed to do this. You know, stop talking about it. It comes up multiple times and he condemns him every time. And in the conversation, we find out that Merlin needs his soul saved. That's an interesting, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. Like, why does he need his soul saved? Because he's also described as a Christian. So, okay, you have this ancient guy from the 5th century AD who's described as a Christian from that era, and yet needs his soul saved. And there's other clues too, but that's one of the strongest ones. So I think Lewis doesn't reconcile it, is basically what I'm saying. I think he thinks that magia is something to be condemned, even though it is not as frightening or scary as Gattaea.
And so when he refers to things like, say, the Narnia Chronicles, where he refers to the deep magic and all of that, that's just a literary technique. He's not literally talking about magic there.
Well, yeah. So when you see in Narnia the use of magic to describe, say, God's actions, you know, or Aslan, obviously, but that's God. So when that occurs, I think that's just the word Lewis is using to describe God's power. And I think that works fine when you're, you know, talking about stories for children and helping them, you know, grasp what's happening here. But I don't think if we actually look at like what Lewis means by magic, when we look at Ohel, that God and his power is magic. No, magic is human power, that there were attempt at human power to command things. And of course, Aslan is different than that. So I think it's to be condemned, except when it's God. And then, you know, okay, it's not truly magic in that case. I think that's just how Lewis writes it in the Chronicles of Narnia.
And do you think, going back to Merlin, do you think Lewis thinks that a historical Merlin did actually exist?
Yeah, my guess is no, because of, well, it's hard to say. So he has this letter where he says, I'm not committed to a historical Merlin or Arthur, but that doesn't totally rule out that he himself personally thought that Merlin, in fact, did exist. Mm. If I had to say, I would guess that Lewis thinks maybe I'd lean like 60-40 to thinking Lewis thinks that he didn't, but I certainly think it's definitely an option that he thinks that Merlin did. But then the historical Merlin and all the legendary stories that are written about Merlin, I think Lewis, he clearly understands that there would be a difference, because part of what was done with these Arthurian tales was to rewrite them as the author saw fit. So, you know, if you look at Layamon, one of the early ones, or Geoffrey of Monmouth and what he writes, you know, it's very different than, say, what Lewis does in That Hideous Strength. And there's a whole host of other tales in between. Mm-hmm. And part of this tradition is you take the character and then you craft him as you want to, basically. It's very malleable.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.